Greetings, listeners. My name's Andrew, and with me is John Lander. In this podcast, produced by IPAN, the Independent and Peaceful Australia Network, we examine the extent of US economic domination and its impact on the life of most Australians.
We Australians live under the military, economic, and cultural domination of the United States. That is a fact of life, and to our great disadvantage. A few years ago, I tried to draw attention to our subservience to the United States under the ANZUS Alliance and its offshoots, AUKUS, and the Force Posture Agreement. Less attention has been given to the United States' economic domination, even though it's a major reason why a wealthy country like Australia is beset by rising levels of poverty, homelessness, and other social issues, resulting in ever more workers struggling to make ends meet.
Historian Len Fox, in his 1980 book, Multinationals Take Over Australia, provided the following figures for foreign control of various industries. Motor vehicles, 99.8%. Oil refining by ownership, 90.8%. Basic chemicals, 78%. Pharmaceuticals, 77.8%. Transport equipment, 54.6%. Basic metals, 38%. Textiles, 33.3%. Food, beverages and tobacco, 33.2%. These figures were obtained from the Australian Bureau of Statistics. Unfortunately, more recent figures are not available from this source because in 1978, John Howard, Treasurer under the Fraser government, stopped the ABS collecting data on foreign ownership. This data was an embarrassment at a time when the Fraser government was encouraging foreign investment.
We are indebted to the conversation and to Clinton Fernandez for more up-to-date information on foreign ownership of industry in Australia. I quote Clinton as follows. Right now, US corporations eclipse everyone else in their ability to influence our politics through their investments in Australian stocks. Using company ownership data from Bloomberg, I analysed the ownership of Australia's 20 biggest companies a few days after the 2019 federal election in May. Of those 20, 15 were majority owned by US-based investors. Three more were at least 25% US-owned. The list included the following. Commonwealth Bank of Australia, once known as the People's Bank, but following privatisation is now 62% US-owned. The BHP Group, once the big Australian, now 73% US-owned. Westpac Bank, 64% US-owned. National Australia Bank, 63% US-owned. ANZ Bank, 54% US-owned. Woolworths, 66% US-owned. Rio Tinto, 65% US-owned. Wesfarmers, 56% US-owned. And so the list goes on. The ASX's top 20 companies make up close to half of the market capitalisation of the Australian Securities Exchange.
One might ask how such US economic domination is to the Australian people's detriment. After all, governments keep telling us that foreign investment is a great boon and something we can't do without.
Yes, foreign investment is a boon and very useful and valuable for the development of industry in a small country like Australia, but only so long as the Australian side manages to maintain majority shareholding. Because of the financial size and the domination of our industries, decisions about investment and development are not made by the Australian government anymore, but are made in corporate boardrooms, mostly overseas. Those decisions are made to maximise profit for their shareholders, their primary responsibility, not in order to meet the national priorities for the benefit of the Australian people.
A classic case is the car manufacturing industry. Successive Australian governments allowed and even encouraged foreign investment until the entire car industry was 100% foreign-owned. The government thus lost any control over this industry, which was then taken out of Australia by its foreign owners when they decided they could make greater profits in a low labour cost country. Closure of the car industry caused closure of support industries and a massive loss of jobs and skills.
We also lose out because of tax manipulation and the so-called creative accounting. Clinton Fernandez, in his excellent book Island Off the Coast of Asia, writes, and I quote, "Recent work by investigative journalist Michael West and the Tax Justice Network have exposed the myriad ways in which certain corporations get around the tax laws. ExxonMobil, for instance, paid zero tax on more than $18 billion in income in 2014-15, although the price of domestic gas went through the roof. Figures analysed and released in December 2017 showed Glencore, which operates in commodities industries such as coal, copper, oil and zinc, managed to exterminate all profit and tax on $22 billion in income. Shell Australia paid zero on $4.2 billion in revenue. Chevron paid nothing on $2.1 billion. Viva Energy, which bought the petrol stations from Shell, zero tax on $16.8 billion. And ExxonMobil, not a single cent on $6.7 billion.
In short, one Australian worker paid more tax than five giant, mostly US-owned, transnational corporations whose combined income in that year was $51.8 billion. The Australian people suffer because the lost tax revenue could finance pressing social needs such as public housing, essential upgrading of public health care, and addressing the climate crisis.
The power of the foreign-owned mining sector was clearly seen in 2010 when it mounted a very public political campaign to oppose Prime Minister Kevin Rudd's proposed resources rental tax, which would have improved the income from this sector for the benefit of the Australian people. The ALP buckled under this political pressure, replacing Rudd with Julia Gillard, who promptly bowed to the wishes of the transnational mining companies and removed the resources rental tax proposal from further consideration.
We can learn much from Norway's alternative approach to development of its energy resources, by which it maintains sovereign control for the benefit of its people. In Island Off the Coast of Asia, Clinton Fernandez explains it as follows.
Yes, Andrew, he said, the Australian government deployed the full weight of its diplomatic, legal and scientific assets over decades to secure massive benefits for the United States Corporation Woodside's shareholders. In return, according to Woodside's own calculations, in February 2017, the government received approximately $26 billion in royalties, excise and taxes from the North West Shelf project since it began in 1964, a period of 33 years.
Clinton continues, by contrast, Norway harnessed its earnings from oil and gas in its continental shelf. The Norwegian government is the largest shareholder in Statoil, its state oil company. Statoil's workers elect 3 of the company's 11 directors. Its shareholder meetings are open to the public. Its financial statements and major decisions are available to the public. The Norwegian government created Oljefondet, or Oil Fund, in 1990 to invest Norway's oil revenue. The fund had more than 11 billion kroner, more than 1.7 trillion Australian dollars, in 2021. This was a handsome investment for a country with 5.5 million people.
Clinton concluded with, and I quote, "But in Australia, in the absence of a nationally owned energy company, the national interest amounts to the socialisation of costs and risks and the privatisation of profit. In other words, the shareholders get the benefit and the taxpayer pays for the losses."
US transnational corporations have used their dominant position to put downward pressure on wages, and as the following example indicates, their attitude to workers' rights leaves much to be desired. For example, former trade union organiser Shirley Winton has stated that, and I quote, "ExxonMobil is the biggest global oil and gas monopoly. In 2017, ExxonMobil workers at Longford in Victoria went on strike for more than 6 months, fighting against ExxonMobil cutting their wages by 30% and worsening working conditions. For 6 months, in a long and bitter struggle with the oil monopoly, workers set up a 24-hour picket outside ExxonMobil at Longford in Victoria. They organised and ran the picket themselves and drew wide support from many workers, unions and communities, locally, nationally and internationally."
The striking Longford workers also pointed out that in that same time, over 3 years, ExxonMobil did not pay a cent of corporate taxes while pocketing $25 billion in income from the plunder of our natural resources and the exploitation of workers, with the profits sent overseas to its head office in the United States.
Successive Australian governments have encouraged and even subsidised US and other foreign transnationals, allowing them to dominate key industries and thus forfeiting any ability to exercise sovereign control of the economy and set national economic priorities. The alternative to dominant foreign ownership and control is publicly owned enterprises, but this was jettisoned by successive governments when they adopted the policy of privatisation, selling off the Commonwealth Bank, Australian defence industries and many others, and opening up those enterprises to take over via share buyout.
At present, only 2 minor political parties are proposing policies that could help regain some degree of economic sovereignty.
In 2024, the then Greens leader, Adam Bandt, announced plans for a supersized tax to target big business and argued that the government could take more than $500 billion from the private sector to fund a rent freeze, make childcare free, eliminate student debt, and cover dentistry through Medicare. The Australian Citizens Party is campaigning for the establishment of a government-owned people's bank using Australia Post offices.
For a bright and independent future, in which the people of Australia gain the maximum benefit of the country's bountiful resources, we certainly need to break free of United States economic domination, reversing the ruinous privatisation policies and regaining some degree of sovereign control through public ownership would be a good starting point.
IPAN will be addressing the issue of US domination and the urgent need to break free from it at its national conference to be held in Adelaide from July 24th to 26th of this year. Registration and details are on the IPAN website, which is www.ipan.org.au. That is www.ipan.org.au. And that brings us to the end of this IPAN podcast. Good day and thanks for listening. ¶¶